Good afternoon, 4:30 and 47 degrees in Moorhead. This is Mountain Edition. I'm Dan Conte.
And I'm Courtney Howe.
I've had chairs come to me and they've turned around and they've been so mad at me that they couldn't see because I would not waive that posting.
State Representative Rocky Adkins says he rarely pushed bills to the House floor when he was majority leader, the way the Democrat claims the GOP is doing now.
Kentucky State Police ask for help in solving a 2-year-old murder.
And the Moorhead Inspiration Center is the recipient of a $220,000 state grant.
In sports, the Round County girls basketball team is home for Nicholas County this evening.
But Luke has the Stocks.
Partly cloudy and colder tonight, lows around 31 degrees. The complete forecast is coming up after this news.
On the second anniversary of his killing, the Moorhead Post of the Kentucky State Police is asking for help in its continuing investigation into the death of Kelly Lee Glover. The 49-year-old Olive Hill man was found dead of a gunshot wound in a rural part of Elliott County on February 13, 2015. Police say he had been shot once in the head, and his body was discovered beside a gravel truck along Davis Trail Road. Trooper Scott Farrell says the KSP is still actively pursuing the case. He's asking anyone with information about the homicide to contact the Moorhead Post.
The Moorhead Inspiration Center and the City of Mount Olivet are among the recipients of nearly $6 million in state grants announced by the Kentucky Department for Local Government. KLG Commissioner Sandy Donahue says the Recovery Kentucky facility on U.S. 60 is receiving $220,000. Mount Olivet is getting more than $630,000 to renovate and expand the Robertson County Waste Water Treatment Plant. The Moorhead Inspiration Center is a 9-to-12-month residential recovery program for adult men with substance abuse problems. It serves about 100 men.
Bellevue Police Chief Wayne Turner says some of the drug addicts now overdosing on carfentanil don't realize what they're taking. Turner says people who've been using Percocet are now being tricked into buying the more deadly drug.
They've been on pain pills for whatever reason. They've continued on pain pills. They've been cut off. They buy Percocets on the street because that's the only avenue they have for pain. And what we're finding is more and more, with a pill press and a little bit of food color dye, the blue pill that looks like being sold as a Percocet is actually carfentanil.
And Turner says the content is more powerful than ever. In some cases, he explains, it's taking 3 or 4 doses of Narcan to revive an overdose victim.
An Eastern Kentucky lawmaker says some of the physicians who fueled the Commonwealth's opioid addiction scourge made a lot of money from it and are still practicing. State Senator Ray Jones is a Democrat from Pikeville.
You know, we just had a doctor who ran a pain clinic in Eastern Kentucky that was fined $20 million for some of the practices. He's going to prison for 3 years. But for everyone that's been prosecuted, there's probably 10 or more that walked away with their pockets full of money scot-free. And it's really the one group that should have been targeted as well.
Jones claims those doctors killed thousands of Kentuckians and have never been prosecuted for it.
The level of indigent care provided by Kentucky's rural hospitals has declined significantly since passage of the Federal Affordable Care Act. So says Michael Rust, who is chief executive officer of the Kentucky Hospital Association. Russ talked about the ACA and other issues Sunday on KET's Kentucky Health. He says 89% of the people served by Kentucky's rural hospitals are covered by the Medicare or Medicaid programs.
Our concern is if the ACA is repealed, we want something to replace it because these folks need coverage. They have to have coverage, and we're seeing results. They're improving their health, and that's our role, to improve the health of the citizens of the Commonwealth. And we believe with the additional testing for diabetes, mammograms, colonoscopies, etc., they're getting this coverage now.
Rust says if rural Kentuckians continue to have access to those tests, it'll prevent more serious and expensive health problems later.
Officials say several children around Ohio have died of flu-related illnesses, and hospitalizations continue to increase in the midst of what is typically the peak time during flu season. The Ohio Department of Health says more than 2,000 people have been hospitalized with flu-related illnesses this flu season, which usually lasts from October to May. The agency is urging Ohioans who haven't received the flu vaccine to do so. Ohio confirmed 3 flu-related child deaths in the past few weeks. At least 20 flu-related child deaths have been reported nationwide.
Ohio Auditor Dave Yost believes that requiring a photo ID on new food stamp eligibility cards in the state will substantially reduce fraud in the program. The Republican is asking the Ohio legislature to approve a bill calling for such a change.
We believe that this will be helpful to avoid trafficking in cards. We know that there are trafficking in food benefits that happens around the state, and a photograph is a simple, straightforward way to deter that.
Yost says he learned recently from the U.S. Department of Agriculture that there's no federal prohibition against requiring a picture on food stamp recipient cards.
Attorney General Andy Beshear says his Office of Civil and Environmental Law in 2016 returned a lot more money to Kentucky taxpayers than it spent. The Democrat says the office was given just over $2 million for operations, and it returned $200 million in value to the Commonwealth.
This $200 million of value includes $20 million returned directly to the Commonwealth, what could reach $85 million in restitution to Kentuckians, and $90 million in tobacco settlement payments, which this group manages, all in just 2016.
Beshear says that money was used for early childhood education programs to help address the state's backlog of untested rape kits and to support 15 drug treatment centers across the Commonwealth.
State Representative Rocky Adkins is accusing majority Republicans in the Kentucky House of rushing legislation to the floor without sufficient vetting in committee. The Moorhead Democrat is defending himself from GOP claims that he did the same thing when he was majority leader. Adkins contends he posted bills with their proper committees most of the time before they were submitted for a floor vote.
You can ask anybody in our caucus, and you can ask anybody on this staff, how many times that they got fired up at me when I would not waive posting because I did not like waiving posting. I've had chairs come to me and they've turned around and they've been so mad at me that they couldn't see because I would not waive that posting. And the reason I would not waive that posting is because I didn't want to be perceived as fast-tracking that process.
While admitting he made some exceptions, Adkins says after 14 years as majority leader, he became a staunch defender of institutional process. Adkins is now the House minority leader.
Despite Donald Trump's victory in the November presidential election, Senator Rand Paul says the Republican Party must expand its base. The Kentucky lawmaker appeared Sunday on C-SPAN's Newsmakers program. He says the coalition of voters that put Trump in the White House is too narrow to sustain much longer.
The idea of nationalism and the idea of let's, you know, encase ourselves in a wall is not necessarily a winning strategy for a long period of time because we are an increasingly diverse country. And I think Republicans do have to compete for Hispanic votes, African American votes, youth vote. We do have to compete in those areas. Women's vote. There were a lot of women here on that march.
Paul says he was surprised that Trump received enough electoral votes to win the presidency, but he's quick to add a lot of other people were surprised too.
The fourth annual Kentucky Refugee and Immigrant Day in Frankfort is slated to take place Thursday. Hundreds of advocates from across the state are expected to attend the 1:30 gathering behind the Capitol building and urge legislators to keep Kentucky a welcoming place for refugees and immigrants. Chris Martini is with Catholic Charities of Louisville. He is coordinating the event.
An opportunity to kind of put a face to our refugees, brothers and sisters who are in our community and are active members of our community, and it's a great opportunity to see that. So we usually have a good number of supporters from our community, our refugees and immigrants themselves, that come out to show their support and, you know, practice their civic responsibilities.
Martini says faith leaders, community advocates, and immigrants are scheduled to speak.
The finalist for the president's job at Moorhead State is confident he can help the school work through its challenges posed by the state's expected move to performance-based funding for its colleges and universities. Dr. Jay Morgan is a former provost at Murray State University. He currently works for the Kentucky Council on Post-Secondary Education and was one of the CPE's chief architects for its performance-based funding formula. Morgan says that factor would give Moorhead State a leg up when it starts dealing with the plan.
in looking at that, I think, you know, I would be very poised to begin working almost immediately with the campus to really position the university in a good trajectory toward meeting a lot of the targets that we're going to need to meet as an institution to maintain that funding long term.
The state legislature is expected to approve a performance-based funding for its post-secondary institutions during the 2017 session. Morgan visits the MSU campus March 5th and 6th. The School Board of Regents wants to name retiring President Wayne Andrews' replacement next month.
The city of Maysville has officially put its conference center up for sale. Commissioners last week decided they'll accept sealed bids for the center through February 27th at 1 p.m. The minimum required bid will be $225,000, which is the appraised value for the Second Street property. Mayor David Cartmell is confident the building, which features a main meeting room and commercial kitchen, will sell.
Because there is a real renaissance going on in downtown Maysville, and the vacant building next to it is just sold to some developers from Florida and Lexington. So, I mean, we're hoping that that particular area is going to be, you know, the prospect of revitalization going on there. And, I mean, I think that's just going to be a nice area to own property.
Cartmell says Maysville no longer needs the conference center since most of the activities that were formerly held there have been moved to the refurbished Cox Building. By selling the conference center, the city will save $20,000 a year it currently spends on the building's utilities.
The Daniel Boone National Forest is making its 80th year as part of America's National Forest System. President Franklin Roosevelt signed a proclamation in 1937 establishing the Cumberland National Forest in southern and eastern Kentucky. The forest was renamed for the famed pioneer Daniel Boone in 1966. John Kazmierski is the Cumberland District Ranger for the Daniel Boone National Forest. He says the area is where North America's northern and southern forests meet, making it one of the world's great biological hotbeds.
The biological diversity, the southern forest and the northern forest and ecosystems meet up here in central eastern Kentucky and basically makes this one of the biological hotbeds of the world. You can just go and take a walk in these forests to see how diverse they are, see the different flora, trees that really make up this area.
21 Kentucky counties play host to the Daniel Boone's nearly 709,000 acres of forest land. Recreational activities in the forest contribute $14.5 billion a year to the U.S. economy.
And finally, this afternoon, Flatwoods has been named the safest city in Kentucky. Details now from MSPR's Victoria Agee.
With a population of 7,500, Flatwoods is tops among the municipalities with populations of 5,000 to 10,000 on the list of Kentucky's safest cities. It also has the lowest crime rate out of all 75 cities on the list, which makes Flatwoods number one overall. The rankings are based on violent crimes and violent crimes on property. Every year, cities turn in their case report to the FBI, which determines annual rates for crimes like murder, rape, assault, and burglary. In its entirety, Kentucky's crime rate is below the national average of 44%, according to a 2016 FBI crime report. Only two out of the 20 safest cities had reported a murder in 2016. Flatwoods Mayor Ron Fields doesn't remember the last time there was a murder in his city and says the town's police department deserves a lot of credit. Reporting for Moorhead State Public Radio, I'm Victoria Agee.
Taking a look at the weather forecast for the MSPR listening area, tonight mostly cloudy skies with the lows around 31 degrees. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy in the morning, then becoming sunny, highs around 51 degrees. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy skies with lows around 31 degrees. And Wednesday, mostly sunny skies, highs around 40 degrees. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy in the evening, then becoming partly cloudy, lows around 25 degrees. And taking a look at the current temperatures around the region, Ashland at 48 degrees, Flemingsburg at 47, Inez and Lexington at 48, Winchester and Moorhead, 47 degrees.
445, you are listening to Mountain Edition on Moorhead State Public Radio. It is great to have your company on this Monday afternoon. On our feature segment, the Kentucky Senate signed off Friday on a bill designed to clarify and defend students' rights to voluntarily express religious and political beliefs at public schools and universities. However, as Josh James reports, detractors only see more confusion ahead.
The Republican-led Senate overwhelmingly favored Senate Bill 17, which asserts the right of students to voice religious and political opinions in school assignments, on clothing, in extracurricular groups, and in artistic or theatrical performances. Bill sponsor Albert Robinson says the measure only rewords and codifies protections already present in the state constitution, but maintains it's necessary to help protect schools like W.R. Castle Elementary in Johnson County, which removed scriptural references from a performance of A Charlie Brown Christmas in 2015 over worries about their legality.
We know that the Muslims already, they can freely express. They have that constitutional right. They should be able to do that. But we that are Christians, you know, we're the ones that have been persecuted and to the point would be prosecuted if we didn't keep our mouth shut.
But Kate Miller with the American Civil Liberties Union predicts the bill will only muddy the waters.
Senate Bill 17 doesn't do anything to enhance those rights, but will likely instead create confusion about what is constitutionally permissible in the classroom, and it'll invite legal challenges about the manner in which it's implemented.
Asked if the bill would provide legal grounds for students to challenge answers on tests, for example, a creationist student who disagrees with a science teacher about the age of the earth, Robinson said the student should be free to repeat what was learned in class while appending his or her opinion without fear of reprisal. Robinson's bill now heads to the House. In Lexington, I'm Josh James reporting.
447, you are tuned to Mountain Edition on Morehead State Public Radio. All Things Considered from NPR is coming up at 5 o'clock this afternoon, and Nathan has sports in 30 seconds.
Support for MSPR comes from the Community Recycling Center in Morehead. The center offers a convenient 24-hour drop-off for a variety of recyclables and on-site pickup program for Rowan County businesses. Shredding services are available for businesses or individuals, and the center provides tours for classrooms and civic groups. Located near the Morehead City Park, the Community Recycling Center also accepts computers, printers and fax machines, DVDs, CDs, phones, videotapes and game devices. More information at 784-1250.
The Lady Vikings take on the Jackets. Good afternoon, reporting from Morehead State Public Radio Sports. I'm Nathan Gutierrez. Looking to get things on track, the Rowan County girls basketball team takes on Nicholas County at Cooper Gym this evening at 7:30. Riddled this season by illnesses and injuries, the Lady Vikings have been forced to use multiple starting lineups featuring a lot of young players. However, Coach Elaine Douglas says those youngsters are getting a better feel for things.
But yeah, you can see them beginning to learn the ropes and getting a little more comfortable in their varsity positions that, you know, they've never had.
Nicholas rolls into Rowan sporting a 17-11 record. And as for the boys' side of things, after a 65-46 win over Morgan County, Coach Sean Thacker and his Vikings will return home tomorrow to host Greenup County at 7:30. Rowan holds a record of 22-6 with an 8-game winning streak. Looking at other teams in the 16th region, 22-5 West Carter will wrap up their regular season tomorrow night against Ashland Blazer on the road before entering the district tournament next week to take on Morgan County. With his team's successful regular season, Coach Jeremy Webb is confident in his comments going into the postseason, but doesn't want them to lose sight of the challenge that's going on this week.
We've accomplished a few things throughout the regular season, but, like I said, I think they're looking forward to the postseason. And one of the things you worry about, the senior-laden team in the last game of the year coming up this week, hopefully we're not looking past Ashland.
Ashland Blazer is 11-16 on the year. The Morehead State basketball Eagles continue to enjoy an amazing late-season run. Saturday's 67-62 victory at Eastern Kentucky gave MSU 4 straight wins and 9 in its last 11 games. Senior forward Trayshad Williams admits the Eagles' 2-10 start this season now seems light years ago.
We've been playing very well. Really, we've been trusting each other and giving our all, putting it all on the court, leaving it all on the court, and we've been getting wins. I think we kind of play like every game is our last game. So pretty much every game is the same. It's just a different team.
Now 13-12 overall, the Eagles will put their 9-3 OVC mark on the line Thursday night at Tennessee State. And after falling to Eastern Kentucky this weekend, 65-58, the Morehead State women's basketball team will return to Johnson Arena on Wednesday to host Tennessee State at 6. MSU is 18-7 overall and 8-4 in conference play. Tennessee State holds a record of 9-14 overall and 4-9 in OVC action. After getting a 67-58 win down in Tuscaloosa, the Kentucky basketball team will return to Rupp Arena tomorrow evening to host Tennessee. Despite the Vols' record, Coach John Calipari knows this will be another challenge for his 20-5 Wildcats.
Well, they're good. I mean, I watched the Georgia game. They should have won that game, too. I mean, they're running their stuff. They're a matchup problem for everybody. Rick's doing an unbelievable job, which he always does, getting his teams ready to battle and play.
Tennessee is 14-11 on the year. Game time is set for 7. Louisville has an ACC contest tonight. The fourth-ranked U of L starts Syracuse at 7. Even though his team is 20-5 overall and 8-4 in conference, Coach Rick Pitino says the Cardinals have some work to do as the regular season hits the stretch drive.
We just got to get better defensively. We got to get better at our zone because you can see on man who they're trying to go at, and we can't let that happen.
Syracuse has a 16-10 record after an 80-75 weekend loss to Pittsburgh. The Morehead State softball team opened its 2017 season by splitting 4 games during a weekend tournament in Georgia at Kennesaw State. The Eagles lost to St. Louis Friday, but the scored wins over South Carolina State and Kennesaw. They wrapped things up with a 9-0 loss to the home team yesterday. The Cincinnati Reds are finally moving on from Brandon Phillips. The Reds yesterday sent the veteran Gold Glove second baseman to Atlanta in exchange for young pitchers Andrew Merikanen and Carlos Fortunato. And general manager Dick Williams says trading Phillips wasn't an easy thing to do.
It's tough when you say goodbye to a popular player like that, especially one that's been with you for a long time and is tenured and has made such a connection to the fans. We're not trying to win a popularity contest. We're just trying to do what we collectively feel is the best for the longer-term future of the organization.
The 35-year-old Phillips vetoed trades last winter that would have him sent to Arizona and Washington. The rebuilding Reds reportedly told him he would sit behind 22-year-old Jose Peraza if he remained in Cincinnati this year. The Reds pitchers and catchers began reporting today to the club's spring training home in Goodyear, Arizona. And finally for today in sports, Morehead State football coach Rob Tenure is glad Brett Rude is back on his staff. Tenure recently hired Rude to coach MSU's offensive line after Patrick St. Louis left the program to take a job at Missouri Western. Rude previously coached at Morehead from 2011 until 2014 when he left to take a job in private business.
He's familiar with our system. He's recruited a lot of our players. You know, he recruited Jake Sutherland and Joe Biembri and Travis Jenkins, and so he's a great recruiter. Those guys are good players for us, too. And he's played the position, so he understands our tempo offense, and we're excited to have him back as our O-line guy.
Rude previously coached the Eagles tight ends and running backs. That's a look at sports. Reporting for Morehead State Public Radio, I'm Nathan Gutierrez.
Support for MSPR comes from MSU Athletics, online at msueagles.com. Women's basketball welcomes Tennessee State at 6 p.m. on Wednesday, February 15th, and Jacksonville State at 2 p.m. on Saturday, February 25th. Tickets and more information from the MSU Eagle Ticket Office at 783-2386 or online at msueagles.com.
4:54, you are tuned to Mountain Edition on Morehead State Public Radio. Bud Luke has been keeping track of business news for us this afternoon. Here's Bud.
Good afternoon from the national offices of Hilliard Lyons. This is Bud Luke with your closing stock market report for MSU Public Radio. U.S. stocks extended gains with major indices notching a third day of record-breaking closing numbers as financial and industrial stocks both paved the way to higher ground. And at the close, the Dow Industrials gained 151 points to finish at 20,421. The S&P 500 was up 12 points at 2328. And the NASDAQ Composite was up 32 points to finish at 5766. And as mentioned, all three indices closed at all-time record closing highs. And, of course, banks have been the biggest beneficiaries of this post-election rally, with investors betting they will benefit from both deregulation and an environment of rising interest rates. Also, industrial stocks have gained on hopes for a massive infrastructure deal. And these two groups were strong today. Goldman Sachs gained 1.7%, while J.P. Morgan was up 1.4%, and heavy machinery maker Caterpillar rose 2.5%. A meeting between President Trump and Canadian Prime Minister Trudeau had no significant impact on the U.S. market. The Canadian benchmark itself was up 3%, extending gains from last week. Shares in Verizon fell 0.8% as the nation's biggest wireless carrier starts selling unlimited data plans again, and this is the first time Verizon has offered such a service since 2011, and this, of course, signals that intense competition is forcing the telecom to change its strategy. Teva Pharmaceuticals was up over 5% after the company reported earnings and revenue that beat expectations. Overseas, European stocks rose, and Asian markets closed higher. In the oil markets, oil was down 1.8%, and gold futures fell 0.6%. The U.S. dollar index managed a very small gain of 0.03%. Among Dow industrial stocks, your best performers were Caterpillar and Goldman Sachs, and your worst performers were Verizon and Walmart. In the S&P 500, the best performers were Goodyear Tire and Regeneron Pharmaceuticals, and the worst performers were NVIDIA and Activision Blizzard. Turning now to stocks of local interest, it was Ashland Incorporated up $1.98 at $120.66, CSX up 14 cents at $47.91, AEP down 16 cents at $63.79, Marathon Petroleum up 14 cents at $50.28, AK Steel up 36 cents at $8.76, and Anthem was up $1.20 to finish at $163.52. Reporting for MSU Public Radio, this is Bud Luke from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons.
Last look at your weather forecast for the MSPR listening area. Tonight, mostly cloudy skies with lows around 31 degrees. Tuesday, mostly cloudy, then becoming sunny, highs around 51 degrees. Tuesday night, mostly cloudy with lows around 31 degrees. Wednesday, mostly sunny skies with highs around 40 degrees. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy in the evening, then becoming partly cloudy, lows around 25 degrees. Thursday, mostly sunny skies with highs around 41 degrees. Thursday night, partly cloudy, lows around 31 degrees. And for your Friday, sunny skies with highs around 59 degrees, and Friday night, mostly clear with lows around 41 degrees. It is currently 48 degrees in Ashland, 47 degrees in Flemingsburg, 48 degrees in Inez and Lexington. It is currently 47 degrees in Winchester and Moorhead.
And that will bring the curtain down on Mountain Edition this afternoon. We had help from Chuck Meraz, Nathan Gutierrez, Sean Delaney, Ashley Chapman, Jacob Lindberg, Kenzie Thompson, and Victoria Agee. From WUKY, Josh James. This is Moorhead State Public Radio, WMKY Moorhead, and translator W202BHINES. Our show is archived daily on the web at WMKY.org. For Courtney Howell and all of the MSPR News team, I'm Dan Conte, Morehead State Public Radio News. All Things Considered is next. It's 5 o'clock.